Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Manchester Football Social Forever Blue. Thanks for downloading the show. Make sure you've subscribed to the show so that you never miss another episode. You can do that wherever and however you listen to podcasts. Please make sure that you follow us too on Twitter at @MCRFootySocial.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Hello, gang. We're back again. It's all Manchester City for the next hour on the Football Social. I'm Ian Cheeseman. With me in the studio at the moment as City legend, that is, Mr.
Paul Lake.
Yeah, you're supposed to say your own name. I thought, well, I could say it for you, but I thought you'd be more than capable of doing that yourself.
Thanks, mate, yeah.
So, brilliant. Nice to have you here. And we have the City legend of a different type in City Square, that is
Natalie Pike!
Hey!
Yes!
We've got other guests on the way as well, and of course you can get involved at any time by sending us a text or giving us a call or whatever, and we'd love to hear from you. However, we haven't got a shortage of things to talk about tonight. We've got a lot to talk about, actually. Where do we start? We've got Phil Foden, who's just signed a 5.5-year contract. We've got Raheem Sterling being racially abused. The performance at Chelsea, City losing for the first time. Tomorrow it's Hoffenheim at home. Injury news we hear today is that David Silva's going to be out for days or weeks. Not sure how long that's going to be. Kevin De Bruyne is still out. Aguero might be back at the weekend. So there's a whole lot of January transfer windows not too far away. Where do you want to start? Well, I'll tell you what.
Goodness.
Before you start, I've got to get this off my chest, right? Because people have been talking about this Raheem Sterling thing, and I don't want to make the whole hour about that, and I'm sure you two don't want to do it either. However, and social media, you know what social media is like? People have said, have been saying, well, you know, why don't we, you know, hear what you've got to say? So I'm going to say what I've got to say now, and I'm under no control. Despite the fact that I do this vlog for Manchester City, I'm not gagged, silenced, told what to say or anything. I'm just going to say my own stuff, right? Obviously, what happened to Raheem Sterling, even though at the moment it's not been proven, 4 Chelsea fans have been suspended, internal investigation happening, but it's fairly clear that something bad happened. Raheem Sterling's own statement more or less said that he felt it was racial abuse. Racial abuse of any type, as far as I'm concerned, is completely unforgivable on any level, whether it's black, white, which is usually what we refer to as racial, or whether it's other types of racial, because there's plenty of others. Obviously, don't want to get political here, but with Brexit happening and everything, we've seen it happening in the country. In fact, it happens all over the world with people from different countries who might have the same coloured skin. We've got people who have different religions, different sexual orientations, different genders, all those things. As far as I'm concerned, everybody's equal. And what happened to Raheem Sterling is completely unforgivable. The self-control he showed to just smile and laugh and deal with it in the way he did fills me full of admiration that anybody can actually do that. So hats off to Raheem Sterling for reacting in that way. But obviously there's been another question which we're going to tackle a little bit later on about whether this type of stuff is stoked up by either the media or the newspapers or radio or television. We're in radio. You know, are we stoking it up? I don't think I am. I don't think you two are in the studio. But nevertheless, there are accusations that that has happened as well. We'll explore all of this. We'll go through the Chelsea game in detail. But I just felt I had to get off my chest how I felt. And as far as I'm concerned, every human being on this planet, I don't care who you are, what your background is, where you're from, what your religion is, everybody deserves the same amount of respect. And to watch that happen to a footballer, a young footballer, is just, well, it wouldn't matter who it was, actually. It could happen to somebody in this office. I would feel very, very angry about it. I've got it off my chest now.
Good. Yeah, and I think everybody listening, I would like to imagine everybody listening agrees with you. And Pep Guardiola's come out today in his press conference and said that racism is everywhere. It's not just in football. And we have to fight to make a better future for everyone, not just in England, but everywhere. And I think that's, you know, spot on. And I think the way Raheem Sterling has handled himself is incredible. You know, like you say, the way he reacted when it's happened to him. And I would sort of say, sadly, it's probably because he's so used to it. I imagine Raheem Sterling has grown up with racism for most part of his life, and so now when he hears it, he just laughs, and because that's, you know, he probably thinks that's all he can do. But I think the post that he made, you know, it was so well thought out. It was so intelligent. The point that he's made, we've got to take a positive from this. It's that hopefully it starts a new serious conversation about race in this country and, you know, in football and beyond.
Well, so many ex-players have come out sort of speaking quite openly around the fact that they still feel that it's ever-present. It might be underground, so to speak, but it's still ever-present. And
it'll never go away, will it?
No. And you're always going to have...
Sadly.
I mean, it's kind of... Well, obviously, racism is taught. It's not part of your DNA. And that's the sad part about it, is that it's propagated by your environment, by certain people. And you like to think that it's... It's probably our age and over, Ian. It's that generational thing, you'd like to think. Hopefully that's going to be the case. I mean, certainly the younger generation, I don't feel would accept that. And you almost put that kind of comparison with some of the Brexiteers that were quite older generation that, you know, have actually voted that way. Although, you know, you can argue the sort of, you know, where are those with that? But, I mean, ironically, in the changing rooms, there's none. There's no racism. I've never experienced it. I've never seen it. I spoke to so many ex-players and current players. It's just not an issue at all. And it must be difficult, especially when we know that, okay, these Chelsea fans were caught in that moment. But that could be at any stadium, sadly, and it still could be. And it takes a lot to oust people, to be brave enough to sort of stand up and say, that's not acceptable, and to call them out on it. It might cost them ever coming to that stadium ever again. But I think we need to make the stand. More people need to stand up and be counted, you know, and that's going to be the issue now. I mean, my son was walking to the game, the Bournemouth game, and it was a City fan in his 60s crossing the road, and a car almost knocked him down, but it was his own fault, stepped out the road, and it was a black guy driving. And this City fan called this guy the N-word. And my son's 15, and he's an innocent bystander, but he actually called him out and said, that's not acceptable. Now, I'd been asking him to do that. You know, none of us knew. My wife was there, but it was the younger generation. They're not having it. And that's
good.
What we need to do. We need to look at the younger generation now to make sure that it's stamped out forever. And with education and with consistency and more big-name players, more high-profile players, making sure that everyone's heard, I think eventually we're going to wheedle it out.
I hope as well at some point, because as I mentioned before, racism takes lots of different forms. It can be anti-Semitism. It can be gender-specific. It can be homosexuality, you know, And you know, at the moment, no male footballer has had the confidence really to come out as a gay footballer
while playing.
You're quite right. And I'm thinking that in itself is quite a sad reflection of the fact that we're still not at that point where people can openly do, you know, say whatever they want really about their religion or whatever without it becoming an issue to somebody somewhere. But you're quite right. I mean, please give me some hope here, Natalie. You're from a younger generation, so Lakey and me are both old. But, you know,
cheers.
It's got to go.
probably not that much between us.
But eventually, that it's got to. Surely it's got to go. It's a different world now, isn't it?
It has to. You just got to hope. But, you know, the worry is, like Lakey said, it's not something that... God, we're getting very deep here, aren't we?
Yeah,
it's not something you're born with. It's something you're taught. So are these people having kids? That's the worry, like. But, I mean, I'm so proud of your son. You know, you must have been so proud of him as well, because we have to try and speak up when we get the opportunity.
But he actually said to this guy that you're doing a disservice to all City fans. You know, but he actually meant football fans, but he actually said City fans, you know, wearing a City skirt. It was a sad indictment of a very small minority, but every club will have these people and we just need to make sure they get called out.
Definitely. And let's support Raheem. And, you know, and we're talking about it. I think it's good. Everyone needs to talk about it. We need to accept that it happens. And, you know, I think we have to say as well, as a white woman, I have never experienced racism. It's difficult for me to talk about it because I haven't experienced it. But I think it's important that we do all talk about it. We need to learn. We need to openly discuss these things in our country. And if this incident with Raheem Sterling makes people talk about it, then it can only be a positive thing.
Well, you know, Cheesy, just very quickly, I worked as a physiotherapist at Burnley, and it was one of the home games, and there was the twin brothers who were black who played for Luton Town, and he went off the pitch, and I was treating a player off of the pitch quite near to me, and a fan. I'm not saying that all Burnley fans are racist, because they're not, but someone threw a banana on the pitch, and I threw it back at this guy, and I stood up and said, "I can't believe you." And he said, "Oh, I didn't mean our black players, I meant theirs." I mean, what a ridiculous statement to make, and that's what you're dealing with. Again, small minority, but it's frightening some people's opinions, and that lack of emotional control means how can I be as offensive as I can? And you saw...
That's it, isn't it? What's going to upset them? Yeah. What's going to upset somebody?
The animosity that those Chelsea fans showed to Raheem Sterling was frightening, really.
You think it's changed since... I mean, when I remember Alex Williams coming into City's team, it was sort of routine that you went to an away game and bananas were thrown because he was in goal, so he was near the crowd. And generally, the most partisan fans are the ones behind the goal. I know it's slightly changed from in different grounds these days, but that was how it was in them days. And as Alex Williams came out, that was just normal, you know. And
that's sad, isn't
you know,
it?
And it is sad, yeah. You know. But you think it's changed now? I mean, my son was watching the Everton game yesterday, was it, against Watford. And he wasn't talking about it. This wasn't about racism. This was a different subject, but it all seems to me to feed into it. He saw a close up of the crowd as a player went near to the crowd. I don't even know who the player was. I don't know what colour of his skin was. It's irrelevant. But he was an opposition player, and he was near the crowd. And he said the amount of vitriol and hate and anger and spite that was in the faces of these people just really scared him. And I said, sadly, this is a society we live in today that there is so much anger. I mean, I know I'm going off on one here, but as you drive down the road, everybody's angry on the road, aren't they? What is going on with us?
But football is often that for people, like an escapism where they forget who they are and they use it to escape from day-to-day life. Not that that's an excuse in any way whatsoever. But one of the people involved has been named now in the press, and he has said, you know, he's profusely apologised and said, you know, he's embarrassed about what he did. But yeah, I agree with you, Ian. There's just in general, outside of football, there's just a lot of hatred in the world right now.
The trouble is now as well, because I've seen it on social media even today, people are sort of saying, you know, when we move on to the subject of whether journalism is in any way contributed to this, you know, name and shame the guys or ladies that did this. And I'm thinking, well, is that the right approach? Do you now want a witch hunt? Do you now want vigilantes going out saying this person did that? It needs to be education, doesn't it? I mean, some people have said to me, should City have taken more actions? Should City have in some way banned journalists or banned organisations?
You hear that a lot, don't you?
Yeah. And what do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, quite often, in fact, a few people tweeted me this week referring obviously to Alex Ferguson and the way that he would deal with the press. Obviously, totally different issues, but if he didn't like what the press were saying about him, they would get a ban. I don't know. Like, as a person, I like to treat people the way I want to be treated. I like to think that if you're nice to people, you know, people will be nice back to you, and you know, maybe you can teach people that, you know, to be nice. I know, does that sound ridiculously fluffy? Are people going to, is everyone like shaking their heads now going, oh, she sounds really fluffy?
I'm nodding.
Good, thank you. So yeah, I just think we need to, the best way to combat, you know, it's like that famous phrase, when people go low, we go high. And the best way to combat them is to, you know, be nice, smile at them. Let's welcome them in and let's teach them about how, you know, what a great club we are, and, you know, try and change their opinions that way.
We don't know the thoughts of the press officers at football clubs. I mean, I know them and I talk to them a lot, but they wouldn't bring me into their confidence to talk about something like this. But You know, I asked the question to you, the listener, and you know, if you want to get involved, get involved. And to you two who sat with me, and I'm thinking about it myself as well. Should City be more proactive and actually do this, or does that make the whole thing worse? You know, United used to get lots of bad publicity because of the actions of Alex Ferguson banning people. City have seemed to take a different attitude, and I certainly have witnessed press officers at City taking a journalist on one side and having a word and trying to persuade them. But the other thing as well, because we're going to talk to a sports journalist in a minute or two, is often it isn't the sports journalists who actually attend the game who are the ones that the fans are getting most angry about. It's people who write the front pages or the stories inside the papers, or present a news radio program or a news TV program, because it's not just newspapers we're talking about. It's all forms of media.
But again, talk of the layers there. But it's also who's editing. At the end of the day, if something makes a more of a landmark statement, then they will tweak what someone's written. And often the journalist hasn't got control of that.
And there's people that just whose job is just to write headlines.
Exactly.
Yeah, and editors, which is, you know, saying to do that story. We don't know how much of that goes on. So vilifying the individual whose name's over it is not always the right approach anyways. I'm not making excuses for people. And I know there's a lot of anger out there at different individuals who've written stuff and had their names attached to it. But I really don't think that the way to do that is to out individuals and to vilify those. It's to do it in a different way. But I don't claim to know all the answers. Wow, been off on one here, haven't we?
But we're proud of... The overall thing is we're proud of Raheem Sterling.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk some more about this right after this.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
This is Tuesday night, isn't it? Between 6 and 7. And every Tuesday between 6 and 7, we talk Manchester City. You can put insert other words there if you want, and I'm sure it's right. But we principally talk about Manchester City. We being, in this case, Ian Cheeseman, Paul Lake, Natalie Pike, and maybe you. If you want to give us a call, 0345 111 7625, and you can do that at any time, or you can text us on 87711. We've so far talked about Raheem Sterling, and we're going to do one more little bit on this, because part of the debate and part of the question has been the way some people have suggested that the way that the media have reported Raheem Sterling. In fact, that some people have said that the way that it's been reported in the media, and that can be radio, we're radio, newspapers, television, social media, wherever it is, it's everywhere now, isn't it? That has somehow stoked things up and maybe almost encouraged the sort of racist behaviour that we saw at Chelsea, if it's proven, of course, at the week. I've got to say that. Now, one of my esteemed colleagues, Martin Blackburn, who writes for The Sun, is going to join us now. And there are plenty of journalists that I know that work covering Manchester City who, as far as I'm concerned, are exemplary in terms of the way that they do things. Martin is one of those. I think it would be very unfair to to ask you to comment on your newspaper, your employers, or any individual people, Martin, who are colleagues. But in general terms, what do you feel about the criticism that the media, and I include us in it, radio and television as well, have had in as to whether they stoke up this racism and whether it's deliberate?
Yeah, good evening, Ian, and good evening to Paul and Natalie as well. It was, I thought it was a very bold statement that made by Raheem this weekend, and really impressed with him for doing it, to be honest with you, Ian. I mean, it made me as a tabloid journalist feel slightly uncomfortable, but it also made me sort of think quite a lot about a lot of things surrounding Raheem Sterling. So, you know, I take my hat off to him for doing it and for shining the light back on the media, if you like. You know, I personally have got a lot of time for Raheem Sterling. You know, as you know, Ian, I've been lucky. I've travelled around the world with City, and I always tell people about the time when he first signed. You know, I was in the Gold Coast, and there was a game against Melbourne City, and City arranged for Raheem to do a sit down with the handful of journalists who were there. Stuart Brennan of the MAM was another one. And I know Stuart remembers it as well. We were all quite taken with what a sort of polite and engaging lad Raheem was, to the point where when we'd all cleared out of the room, he asked Manchester City's PR if they wanted any help tidying the room up and stacking the chairs up and that. So just a little snapshot there as to what sort of a lad he is, Ian. And if... you know, if people got the chance to talk to him a bit more often, and maybe we could see, you know, the real Raheem Sterling perhaps isn't the same one that is sort of portrayed in the media, if you like. So that's probably not going to happen, partly because, you know, we know now what his feelings about newspapers are. Of course, there's other media he could do that with. But at the same time, you know, he's got every right to feel that way, given some of the things that have been written about him.
The criticism that is most commonly applied into the ways he's portrayed is that if a similar story... So I'm not sure if this is exact, but let's just use this as an example. Raheem Sterling buys a house for his mum as a thank you because he's able to do that. Then the argument that City fans, I've seen them do it on social media, is that he gets vilified for that as being, you know, a bling or whatever. If Phil Foden, who's just got this new contract, goes and does the same thing for his family, they're saying, isn't he a lovely fella, you know, supporting his family? Now, personally, I think they're both lovely people for doing that, but the perception is, rightly or wrongly, that Raheem Sterling is treated in a different way because of the colour of his skin. Is that a conscious... If that is true, and you tell me if you think it is that conscious, subconscious? How does that work?
I mean, it's a good point, Ian, because Raheem used the similar example regarding Phil Foden and Tosin on his Instagram post, didn't he? And I think it was from the Daily Mail or the Mail Online. You know, I'm not going to sort of single any paper or organisation out, but that was just the example that Raheem used and pointed out the sort of difference. Excuse me, in the coverage of the two. Now, I think they were a few months apart, maybe even a year apart. So, you know, there is perhaps it's not a direct comparison, but they were sort of covered very differently. As far as I'm aware, you know, I've never personally encountered any sort of racism like that in the newspaper industry. But, you know, I heard Clark Carlisle and a colleague of mine, Darren Lewis, on GM, I think it was Good Morning Britain with Piers Morgan yesterday, and they talked about, like you say, subconscious, you know, racism, and could that sort of thing go on? Well, I don't know. You know, who knows? It's possible, but I can't speak for everybody, and certainly not.
Well, Martin, you know, you mentioned about how you've sort of reflected on the situation and how you may have been influenced, albeit subconsciously. But at the same time, as a lot, I think a lot of journalists will be doing a lot of soul searching. But even for some players and ex-players, I mean, there was a player, I think it was Dave Kitson, was recently on a radio show talking about the fact that Raheem may be in some ways to blame for it because he's been a little bit brash and a little bit OTT in terms of his own Instagram or his own social media reflections of his life. Like, that's justifying it, which is a scandalous thing to say, almost like saying if a young lady wears a short skirt, then she's going to get attacked and she's asking for it. I mean, so I think we all need to be more consistent, don't you think, in how we talk about these things?
We do, absolutely, Paul, yeah. And Pep Guardiola talked about Raheem, obviously, a lot today and mentioned that sort of use of social media as it happens and how he's not using it quite as much as he was before. I think the things that Dave Kitson was talking about, I've listened to the clip myself, were quite a long time ago, weren't they? I think they were from several years ago. But yeah, I do think that we all need to sort of look at ourselves, really, and consider whether he's got a point, you know. I personally would say that there's been an awful lot of good things written about Raheem Sterling as a footballer, certainly, you know. And this is perhaps where you get a little bit of friction sometimes between the news desks on newspapers and the sports desks. And certainly, you know, Raheem, I mean, in the last couple of seasons, for us as football reporters, how can you write anything that's not good about him? He's been amazing, you know. But like I say, there are sort of news desks who have a possibly a different agenda and go digging for things about his social, you know, his sort of private life. So it's a case of like you say, of us all sort of reassessing the way we do our jobs, the way we go about it. And as I said at the start, you know, credit to Raheem Sterling for coming out and saying what he said in the light of what was a really shocking incident at Chelsea.
It says a lot about you, Martin, that you're prepared to come on and talk to us tonight. Thanks very much for that. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Cheers, Martin.
That's Martin Blackburn, food for thought. I think, you know, we spent half of the show now talking about it. I think we need to, don't you think we need to draw a line? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's going to go away. The problem's not going to be solved. But we've dealt with it. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Chelsea defeat. You were there. What do you think, Nat?
Oh, yeah, my first away game in about 14 months.
You know.
Yeah, I know. I was waiting for that. I don't know. You know, I feel all right about it, to be honest, in a weird sort of way. I don't think it was a corner, by the way, for the second goal, but I think that's kind of buying, you know, whatever. I think we were the better team in the first half. I think they were the better team in the second half, and I don't have a massive qualm about the result. Obviously, we should have taken our chances better in the first half. They scored from their first shot. So, do you know what? It's disappointing, but I never for one second, I'm imagining you guys didn't either, thought we'd go the entire season invincible, as I keep hearing it. I never heard one City fan say that.
No, I mean, I'm like you, I didn't believe that. I mean, in terms of the game itself, if you think about how we approached it, and obviously after that, there was our first shot was something like 8 minutes into the game, and Raheem Sterling had half a chance. And it's just that snapshot, that bit of conviction, you know, because against teams like Chelsea, you only get those half chances. Obviously, Leroy had a chance as well. But you just felt in our right-hand side became quite redundant, you know, insofar as how Chelsea pressed. And there was a high press to begin with. Then they sat behind with five across the middle. And it was difficult to try and get David Silva on the ball in particular. And although he set up both chances for Raheem and for Leroy, aside of that, David didn't really get into the game. I think the last two games as well, we've not really seen the normal David Silva. His form's dipped a bit. Obviously, class doesn't go away, but form can dip, and his form has dipped. And let's hope his hamstring isn't going to be serious. But then, in terms of the goals, you know, it's great in terms of having a term of reference for Pep Guardiola to show certain players, because every player's learning, whether you're 19 or whether you're 34, 35. And certainly for Leroy Sané, he doesn't have that sense of danger. So he wasn't thinking about that ball coming across for Kante, and it was a great finish. And again, with the second goal, no one really picked up David Luiz. So you had John Stones, who didn't know who was behind him. He didn't check his shoulder. Normally he does. And John Stones has been superb this season. I've been so impressed with with him. He's been absolutely excellent. Didn't check his shoulder. Laporte wasn't picking anybody up because he was worried about whoever's going to be at the far post, so to speak. But in terms of those moments, there's two moments where we didn't pick up properly. Kyle Walker, who was so effective in his last game against Chelsea when we beat them 1-0, didn't really get into the game as he would have liked to have done because that right-hand side was so, it was marshalled so well. And he was trying to force the issue by getting forward was the reason why William got in the first place. So it's just individual moments that have cost City. But again, it's a great time of reference for Rodolfo Borrell and for Pep to look at the defensive attributes of certain players to make them realise that you can never switch off. And the game against Liverpool now is going to be built up, you know, to great heights, and one that at the Etihad you feel as though if we can put Liverpool to bed, I think that that's going to be one that's going to demoralise them.
Oh, yes, I like that, Paul. Yeah. I mean, that game now is so big, isn't it, on the 3rd of January? It's even bigger now than it was. But how are you guys feeling about this weekend and the Manchester United versus Liverpool game? Because I'm totally and utterly confused by my feelings towards that game.
Well, you know something, Cheesy, I know about you, but I, as much as I respect my mates who are Reds, I never want United to win a game ever, so a draw is fine.
Draw, okay.
I'll go with that.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, obviously, Liverpool are going to be City's main rivals. United aren't going to be in the title race. But I can't sit there. It's too much in my DNA to sit there and go, come on, United. It just doesn't feel the right vibe. So perhaps I'll just not watch it and whatever happens. You know, it's sort of that sort of thing. But going back to the game against Chelsea, I mean, we've all been defending Raheem Sterling and saying, you know, all the right things, hopefully. In terms of playing, we're allowed to criticise if we want. And I'm going to say that if Raheem Sterling had taken one of those chances early on, and you can make an argument to say that's his natural position and he shouldn't have been playing there, but if he'd have actually buried one of them, I think the outcome of that game would have been very different. Now, obviously, that then opens up the debate about the absence of Aguero. Should Gabriel Jesus have started? Mahrez takes up the position generally when he's selected on the right-hand side, which I'd personally prefer to see Raheem Sterling playing in. I think he's far more effective when he's on the right than either playing that false nine or even playing on the left with Mahrez on the other side. And I think that, you know, missed chances actually in the end was what cost City in that game. Albeit that you can see that there were defensive mistakes, but if City were ahead at that point, might have been a different result.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of the confidence of Chelsea in the second half, it grew as the game went on, and like say, not taking our chances. I think there's a different dynamic. When Mahrez plays, he doesn't really get beyond the fullback that often, although he's got a wonderful step over and he can do that, but he's not the quickest player, if that's maybe not a criticism, that's just how he is. Whereas you look at Raheem in the second half, the one chance he set up for Gabriel Jesus with about 10 minutes to go, he just ran beyond the fullback and his pace took him past him, as he did when he span in the first half, and he did Alonso right on the touchline and put the ball across the box, and Leroy had the shot, but it was blocked by Azpilicueta, went over the bar for a corner. But in those situations, it's like you say, it's about having that different dynamic. Having Raheem and Leroy means you're going to run beyond people. You're going to stay wide. They're going to drop deeper in those areas, but you'll always fancy Raheem and Leroy 1v1. But with Mahrez, you felt like a lot of the time his quality is coming from wide areas, whipping that ball from the right-hand side as an in-swinger towards the centre-forward.
Which was great for Vardy at Leicester on the counter-attack, but I'm not sure it works in City's setup. What do you think, Nat?
Yeah, I know what you're saying about taking the chances, and you know it was frustrating when they scored with it being their first shot on target, and you're thinking about the chances that we had, and yeah, absolutely. But I guess it's just, you know, I don't know. I think I'm just accepting that we got beaten on the day. I feel like we played well, they played well, and they won. You know, yes, we didn't take our chances; they took a few of their chances. But I don't have a massive anger at that. Well, I mean, obviously I'm disappointed that we got beat, but I'm not angry at the result. I'm just kind of accepting of it. Does that make sense?
Well, I think we are as well. It's just I'm obviously just trying to figure out what you might do different. Who am I to question Pep?
How dare you even think of
coach
it?
In the world.
But again, lots of fans have, haven't they, Cheesy? Lots of fans have been talking about his substitutions and were they the right substitutions to make? And would you taking off Leroy Sane at that time and as opposed to Mahrez? And there's lots of questions around, like you say, around Gabriel Jesus. He's not really hit any great sort of vein of form, but he's not played that many games to try and get that consistency going. He scored three in a game where he did score goals, so that's always going to be there. But you're having to compare him to Sergio Aguero. You know, and we've had to counteract the fact that we've not had Mendy playing consistently, really. And Fabian Delph, although he's been incredible in terms of stepping into the breach all of last season, and he's been very good. He was found wanting once or twice, but it's great because all these players can learn from these situations and we can get stronger and better. And David Silva has always said that he feels we're better than last season. Well, I think we've had a dip in form recently. You know, we're only a point behind Liverpool and we've got something now to look up to, which I think will spur us on and will put loads of pressure on Liverpool. They've got Napoli this week. They've got Man United at the weekend. You know, it's not easy at the top, is it? It's tough at the top, is what they say.
It's tough at the top.
Right, OK, we're going to talk a bit more about the game with an ex-City player in a moment, and I'm going to quiz you. You two can have questions to me to try and see if you can work out who that player is right after this.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
I mean, Cheeseman, Natalie Pike, Paul Laker here. We've got another guest coming to join us now. These two don't know who that guest is.
Ooh.
So you have a chance to quiz me now to see if you can work out who it is.
Oh, right. So what are we just asking? We can ask anything,
sort of
or?
Male, female.
Oh. Are you saying yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you are. I did it already.
Oh, yeah. Are you going first, Paul?
All right, then. Has this player played pre or post the start of the Premier League?
That's not yes or no.
Oh, pre.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I'll give
so
you
So was
one.
It? Pre. Thanks, mate. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So pre. So yeah. It's before. Yeah, okay.
Before the Premier League era, is it...
Football didn't even exist then, did it?
Before the Premier League era. So I'm going to say it's a man then because City's women's football was,
correct.
Was 30
Next.
Years old. That's not a question to you. I was referring that to Paul.
Yes.
I was referring that to Paul. Oh.
Go on, Paul.
Okay. Has this player played more than 100 games for City?
That's a good question. Just let me double check.
He's checking his Wikipedia.
You mean you don't know?
I'm pretty sure. No, is the answer.
No. Is this person a hired professional currently of Manchester City in a legend capacity?
No.
Oh.
Did this player play in the 90s?
No. Well, you might have played, but not for City.
Yeah, okay.
80s.
Yes.
Right, okay.
A player in the 80s. Oh, sorry, you'll go, Paul.
Has this player ever been captain?
Oh, that's a good question. We'll ask him in a minute.
Is he a striker?
He wasn't thought of as a captain.
Is he a striker?
Yes.
Oh, a striker from the 80s.
Is he English?
Yes.
An English striker from the 80s that played... I was just alive in the 80s.
What was all that stuff you said before about you're nearly our age?
Yeah, I was just trying to be nice.
Tell you what, I'm going to put you out of your misery.
Okay.
Joining us on the line now is... Who are you, sir?
Puna, Mark Lillis.
Mark Lillis.
Hello!
How
are
you doing, guys?
We're good, how are you?
They couldn't get you.
Thank you, I'm all right.
Were you ever captain?
I was, yeah, when we went on tour to Austria, Billy McNeil, because Paul Power had left to go to Weverton, and Billy McNeil gave Mick McCarthy, I think Kenny and myself, one game each, and I ended up winning my game 2-1. And then when I got back to England, I told my dad, and he was buzzing, and I was buzzing, and then the next step, they sold me to Derby.
There you go. Perfect record. Never
so don't be a captain.
No. Right, let's get your thoughts on the Chelsea game, because you as a coach will have looked at it very analytically, won't you, Mark?
Yeah, it was. I've got to hold my hand up. I thought Chelsea done really well. I thought the game plan was really good, looking at it. And it was two good sides having a go at each other. We come out of the blocks quite quick, but I just felt as the game was going on, we just needed that leader up the top. You know, obviously we haven't got Aguero now, and how much we missed him now. And, you know, that was a pity on the night. But, credit to Chelsea. I think I think they deserve to get the win, to be truthful. But I think it's good in a way when you get games like that as a coach or as a head coach and Pep. You learn a lot from it, you know, and it's easy to say that even if you've lost, but you're going to have that in the season. You can't go on and play beautiful football every game in the season. You're going to get games where you play horrible and win or play horrible and lose. So I didn't think we played horrible. I thought we did okay, but I just thought we were missing that lack of a leader up the top.
And it's difficult when it comes to Sergio Aguero, though. Somebody said to me the other day, "Is Jesus a fair replacement for Sergio Aguero?" And I said, "Well, who is? Like, who in the world is a replacement for Sergio Aguero? Like, when you've got one of the world's best players, like, who? You know, how do you forward plan for that?"
I think it's a chance for a player. You know, when you're a player, and obviously your top strikers can't play, and you get your chance. I think you've really got to put a marker down into especially the head coach's mind as well, of what you can offer the team. And I thought the Chelsea done well with our wide men. I thought they doubled up to them and done a good job on them. You know, if you looked at the stats, I would have thought that, you know, Sarnier, he did okay. I think he was a little bit at fault for the goal. I think he didn't realise the amount of importance it is to track a player back and get the goal side of him. But, you know, he's a young boy. He'll learn from that. You know, he's been fantastic this season. So these young players are going to have flips and they're going to do really well. Paul will know that coming into the game as a young kid. You know, when he was apprentice when I was a pro there, senior pro, and he always knew them type. When he played in that Youth Cup, a lot of them go on and make it because mentally they were good and they were good learners as well.
Bruno, you know, in terms of playing with a false number nine, do you feel that when you are identifying that individual player to be that false number nine, do you feel like they do have to have that ability to be able to play with their back to defenders?
Yeah, I think so, because especially when you play with that, the first thing you'll know is some midfield player or a defender looks up and they want to hit the striker, and I think it's difficult when you're not playing with one. You know, sometimes players can adjust to it quickly and so on. I don't think we adjusted it to it that quickly the other night, you know. And I think Pep, knowing how top quality head coach, he'll look at all the things that he felt they can do better, and the next time we come into that situation, he might have to change it differently. They go to a different style or formation.
It's certainly not anything for City fans to worry about, that defeat at Chelsea, is it, Mark?
No, I was sat there watching it and, you know, this is going to happen, you know, and it's how you react to it. That's the big thing. I was watching the game. It was end-to-end and you had some good top-quality players on show and that, but it was a disappointment, but we're straight at it against Everton the next game, so it'll be interesting to see how we do.
And I love it when I said this last week when we had Paul Dickoff on, but when any ex-player still refers to us as we, I just love it. And I heard you there, Mark. You kept saying we.
Yeah, he never leaves. I mean, it was brought up in Longside in Manchester and North Side areas and that, and he never leaves, you know. And playing, obviously, I didn't make as many appearances as Lakey done, but even one game with that shirt on, you know, it's, you'll never forget it. And that first season I had there, obviously leading goal scorer, which was great, but you know, some of the games that we played, and it was great to know that, you know, you're hopefully going to pass a little advice on to the young youth team that was coming through then, because I knew it was going to be some top players who've gone on and had great careers, not just in football, in life. And that's what you want from, you know, especially myself being an older pro. You want to give them good advice about life and how to deal with it, and this is great satisfaction. But it'll always be we. You know, it'll always be we, and it'll stay with us to the day of dying.
The thing is, Boone, like you say there, I mean, it's all credit to you, and I know from speaking personally that we all appreciated that. The fact is, when you talk the talk and walk the walk, and you have actually played in front of, you know, the main road faithful, you know, and had thousands of fans cheering for you, and you've experienced that. That then means that players, young players, will look up to you and will listen to you. And I thought you more than most, along with Paul Power, made a real effort to make that connection with the young players. And I can tell you now, you're always spoken of fondly.
Mark, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We love you.
Thank you, Mark.
Very much. The Phil Foden.
As well.
Thank you. The Phil Foden, you know, of his generation. So Phil Foden's just done a new contract, 5.5 years, £30,000 a week. I make that about £9 million over the next 5.5 years. Not bad. Anyway, everybody wants him to succeed because he's a local lad, he's a City fan. That's what Mark was. So it seems to, you know, see what I mean, Dave?
Together. He's planned that, hasn't he?
And we're talking about young players. Jadon Sancho had a great game at the weekend for Dortmund against my other team, Schalke. And Diaz, Brahim Diaz is another player who's, you know, been spoken about as potentially moving on. I think you want to talk about that now, don't you, Nat?
Yeah, well, we've got a caller on the line. We've got Miles who would like to chat about Brahim. Hi, Miles.
Hi, Natalie. You okay?
Yeah, how are you?
You all right?
You all right?
Yeah, fine, thank you.
So, what are you thinking, mate?
I'm just thinking about Brahim Diaz, really. I mean, going back to the Fulham game where we won 2-0, and he scored 2 goals. I think he got man of the match as well, didn't he, in that one? I just thought that was the one game where he did have an exceptional performance, and I thought he'd kick on for a start in the Premier League. But it just didn't seem to happen for him. And I'd be a bit gutted if he did go, really, from City with his age as well, especially with his, like Ian just touched upon then, was the Sancho. He's doing really well out at Dortmund now. But I was thinking, like, I think him and Foden are definitely deserving Premier League stars instead of, like, coming on for the last 5 minutes of a game. And I just thought, as a professional footballer, I suppose Paul would know a bit better about this. What would he think about it? Do you think he is worthy of a start now?
Well, I think he is, and actually, there's different layers to this, because actually, if you look at Brahim, he's been with us for a long time now. He knows the system inside and out, and his aspiration was to play in the first team. So obviously, he's not been able to do that. He's seen how well Jadon Sancho's done, and that actually has worked against City in that respect, because he's realised that I'm as good as Jadon, I should be given that chance, and there's only really Phil that is going to get that chance. So Phil will be playing next season. He'll be a regular. But in terms of Brahim Diaz, you know, he's brave, but he's realised that Jadon can do it, I want to do it. I'm not going to get a chance when I've got Sergio and I've got Jesus in front of me. What chance am I going to get if I play deeper? There's obviously a plethora of world-class players in front of me again. I'm not really going to get my chance. I want to be patient, but I need to be playing football. So if I was in his shoes, I think I'd be the same.
Another squad rotation. I'm certain... Putting me reputation's going too far. But I think Foden will start tomorrow against Hoffenheim. I think he'll start next Tuesday at Leicester. So he's going to get game time. And maybe this is a question for another week. But who makes way? If Phil Foden is going to be a regular starter next season, which you're saying, Paul, who makes way for him?
So and that's like, that you've like teed that up for next week, haven't you?
That bombshell. Thank you very much for listening. Obviously, we are available as a podcast. If you've only heard a bit of the show, or you've heard it all and you want to hear it again, or you just want to spread the word, then you know, look for the Football Social XS Manchester Twitter. The link will be out on there. It'll be out on my Twitter. I'm sure Paul and Natalie will tweet it out as well. And I'm back tomorrow, Wednesday Club. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.